Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me this afternoon is my co-host, as always,
the Angry Guy.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. Chad, at the risk of sounding repetitive, I believe that we might have to rename this podcast Two Angry People Yelling About Movies.
Let's see. Normally, we're lucky enough that there's only one of us angry at a time. So It's like one angry guy and one guy that listens. That seems about right. And normally it's you. But we can wait for us to switch roles.
I'm very disappointed that Paul Feig's career is taking a little bit of a hit. A Simple Favor was not received well and not marketed well. And, you know, Paul Feig's a very talented guy who deserves a better treatment than what he's getting. And I feel like fanboys have pretty much just put him in purgatory for the Ghostbusters, which...
Did you see A Simple Favor?
I did.
What did you think of it?
It's okay. I mean, it's not horrible. I mean, it's better than 50 Shades of Grey. But, I mean, it's... The pieces are in place there for it to be... You anticipate with Anna Kendrick being in it and Paul Feig directing it that it's going to be a comedy. I think the trailers and the marketing material made it very clear that's not what it was going to be. I think, unfortunately, there was some unintentional framing that made certain beats feel comedic when they were supposed to be feeling dramatic, and I don't think that's necessarily anybody's fault. I also don't think the marketing did any favors to it. They buried it.
So, going along with the marketing, so I knew that Paul Feig had a movie coming out. I knew he had one coming out with Anna Kendrick. I knew nothing else about this. The first time I heard anything about it other than just my peripheral knowledge of it was like 3 weeks ago when I think it was Vanity Fair, The Hollywood Reporter had this big expose on the naked and sexual scenes of women in Hollywood and how all that stuff goes down. And in there, they mentioned this movie and I didn't even know it was a Paul Feig movie. I just knew that Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively were in it, and that there was nudity. And I was like, oh, what movie is this? And I looked it up and I'm like, oh, it's that. And I told my brother about it, because he's an Anna Kendrick fan. He was like, oh, when does it come out? And I looked it up and I'm like, I think this comes out in November. And I looked it up and I'm like, no, it's this Friday, which I think I told him this on like a Thursday. I'm like, it comes out like tomorrow, and I don't know anything about it.
I saw two trailers, but that's because I'm in the theater all the time. So I saw this trailer twice in front of two different movies. And they did a really good job cutting the trailer, but again, just no marketing. I mean, Blockers got more of a, you know, marketing push than this did.
Yeah, Blockers got a big one.
I don't know what the studio was thinking. I mean, in this era of Me Too and girl empowerment, you've got two very strong, powerful female actresses at the forefront of this movie. In a variation on Gone Girl, if you want to use it that way, with a very prominent director who has a very long history of working with strong female leads, I don't really know what happened, and I can only attribute the blockbuster reaction to, you know, the lack of marketing. But he's still doing better than life itself, so it's got that going for it.
I can't even remember what the hell that's about.
That's the Dan Harmon This Is Us creator deal with Oscar Isaac and like... Made like $3 million in the box office this weekend.
But see, I knew more about that movie than I knew about this one.
Yeah. Simple Favor. Yeah. So Chad, Henry Cavill.
No. We getting this all out of the way at one time. Last.
Okay. Okay, so we finally did get that Captain Marvel footage. Homegirl arrives back on Earth through a Blockbuster video. Can you get more 90s than crashing through into a Blockbuster video?
Look, when they panned down, it was Blockbuster. I'm like, nice touch there, guys. And they actually show inside, I was like, I remember what this damn store looks like. That's it. So, yes, this is for everybody that was born after
2000, maybe?
If you were born in 2000, you probably don't remember Blockbuster. Blockbuster was going strong up until
2005?
Around there. So that's 4 years before my kid was born. So she has no concept of any of this. So she saw that part of the trailer and she was like, it just fades over. She has no idea. And I'm like, I used to be in those aisles looking for those movies and they weren't there and it pissed me off. And the games I wanted weren't there and that pissed me off too. But this is what you are, Blockbuster. So yeah, we're in the 90s right off the rip.
Yeah, I think they did a really, really good job cutting this trailer.
I did too. I think most people that saw it thought so too. But because internet, there's people that didn't. And the one complaint I did see was, and everybody that retweeted this kind of took this person to task, even though I still don't think she quite got why they were taking her to task. But she's like, Samuel Jackson has literally double the amounts of lines that Brie Larson has in the Captain Marvel trailer. And I just had a blank face, like, this is like the introduction trailer. This trailer is literally to tease us about her. They build to her speaking, she doesn't say much, and we get brief glimpses of like her extraordinary power. Why? Because all we know of her is from the movie sense, her little symbol showed up when Nick Fury's beef went off at the end of Infinity War. That's it. Nobody knows. Yes, comic fans might know. But nobody knows anything about her. This trailer is literally the first thing people are going to see of Captain Marvel. So the movie's in March. They just want to tease you. And they're like giving you little pieces. So they give you a familiar character, that same lines, that builds up to things that are going to happen, things that are happening in the movie. You have no context for any of them. And it's all the build up to her. And she says some stuff because it's literally a goddamn tease. That's what this is. Stop overthinking it. Enjoy something. Because I enjoyed the trailer. But then I saw that. I'm like,
okay.
Why can't y'all be happy?
Because, I mean, I get it. But I'd be willing to make a bet if you went back and you looked at the couple of trailers, first couple of trailers for Wonder Woman, there probably wasn't a whole bunch of Diana Prince talking. I think there was some Steve Trevor, talking. I think there was some of her mother talking. I don't believe there was a whole lot of Wonder Woman voiceover in the Wonder Woman trailers. I mean,
that's for a different reason,
right? But I mean, my biggest concern with what I saw. I'm okay with us doing the origin. We talked about it in the last episode. Like, origin story, yeah, we're not going to start there, but we're going to see bits and pieces of it. Here's my deal. I'm concerned about how much Clark Gregg and how much Sam Jackson we're going to get in this movie, because I lived through the experience of Rogue One, and while I was okay with Dead Tarkin walking around and being an actual character, not a whole lot of other people were. And we're not just talking about, like, de-aging Robert Downey Jr. for, like, an 8-minute sequence in Civil War. We're talking about, like, Sam Jackson being a lead actor in the movie and on screen for a giant portion of time. If that CGI does not work, it will pull you out of the film. So,
those are fair. That is a very fair point. But I would say, if I had to list it out, Brie Larson has the most screen time,
Jude Law,
then Sam Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that is fair. I think they're going more, they're probably doing more like Kurt Russell de-aging rather than the Robert Downey Jr. de-aging, which was Kurt Russell had a whole lot of makeup and touch up with CGI. I think that's the route they're going to go with Sam.
Coulson looks
yeah, I said, but I don't think we're going to see him that much, so we'll get him. I mean, if we get Coulson as much as we got him in the first Iron Man, you'll be fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I like the tone, I like the lines, I like, you know, basically the growing up, you know, growing into your power, literally growing into who you want to be and who you can be. I like that message. I like the last shot of her in the suit. I like, you know, the shots of her in the super team. I like what I saw. I don't need to know much about Ben Mendelsohn. I don't need to know much about whatever his one-note villain is going to be, because unfortunately, as we all know, like, even though we're on this hot streak of, like, you know, Killmonger and Thanos and Vulture, and, you know, I don't think that's going to continue here. Ben Mendelsohn is a good guy. He's a very talented actor, but this is the epitome of a movie that is not about the villain.
No, not at all.
So, I'm not expecting a great turn out of him, but I like the design. I like the look. I like the idea of shape-shifting. I think that's going to be kind of cool. Praying that we don't end up with a Secret Wars tease at the end of this. I think you kind of took that off the table with Infinity War, because you know, disappeared half of them, and why would you bring half of humanity back if you knew a large portion of them were, you know, Skrulls? But I mean, other than that, man, it got me on board. I mean, it's, you know, let's get to March, let's see what this thing is, and let's see how it propels. But the best thing about this is it means that we are 6 to 8 weeks away from knowing what the title of this daggum Avengers 4 movie is. By the way, the Russos are just trolling everybody. Giant A's.
After Civil War, when they gave those cryptic pictures that were like leading to Spider-Man, that, you know, people try to put them together, and then you look at the real suit and it's like, what? I mean, I can see what you're going for, but none of that is... Yeah, they're perfecting the trolling game. Like, I see that the Russos have put out a tweet, and I'm like, I'm not even doing this. I'm not playing this game with them. But I've said on here before that, you know, I wasn't excited about Captain Marvel, mostly because it was so far away. We didn't really know anything, but the closer we got, the more I would get on board. I'm on board. I mean, and it was like, it was never a question. I was going to be on board, but I like what I saw. I will say, to your point about taking Secret Invasion off the table, I don't think we get a tease for that in this movie. I do think we get a tease for it at the end of...
Well, I think we will get a tease with this one, because Ben Mendelsohn's character could end up living and shape-shifting into somebody that we know.
Yeah, I mean,
at the end, which would just tease the fact that they were here and they are walking among us. I don't think Marvel wants to go that direction. I really don't think Marvel wants to go that direction with Phase 4.
I hope not.
And we will see. But the other thing I can take away from that is I love the 90s vibe. I love the idea of this being a prequel set before the first Iron Man. But that's all details we've had since last Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
Comic-Con 2017. And, you know, where they really fleshed a lot of this out. I was happy to see... that, you know, the female of the two directors, Anna, is the one out there doing the majority of the speaking about this film, and the majority of the promotional photos on set have the female director doing the talking and the female director doing the blocking and the act, you know, and talking to the actor, because it really promotes the fact that exactly one half of your movie about the first female superhero that is going to get her own solo movie is going to be a woman. Yay! One half.
You got the half.
I got the half. But thankfully, I will get the whole, and we will get to that in a moment. But, I mean, I'm on board with it. You know, let's bring it on. And I love that they threw the pager back in there in the footage.
Yeah, they made a point to show you the pager, and and so if you've seen Infinity War, you know something happens to that pager, and it becomes important, even though we don't know what, except that he...
What or how or why he held on to it for 20 damn years.
Yeah, that. It gave us just enough to not give us anything. Like you said, it's all the stuff we already knew. Her punching the grandma was really good, though.
Because people don't know.
Yeah, people don't know. Everybody that does know that they're shapeshifters are like, oh, well, yeah, duh. That's why she punched them. But even knowing, I'm like, that's funny.
Yeah. So Chad, Mr. Iger gave an interview as part of the being the most powerful person in Hollywood is voted on by the Hollywood Reporter staff. And in said interview, he said that he stands by the decision to let James Gunn go. Your thoughts?
What I found interesting about that, and I haven't read the whole interview, but I did see that part, was that he said it was like, basically made it sound like it was like a vote of high-ranking executives that all decided that this was the way to go, and he supported that decision. And I don't expect him to say otherwise because, I mean, he is the CEO of Disney. This is the decision they made. Yeah, he's got to stand behind it, even if he doesn't want to. To be clear, I think he did support their decision. I don't think they expected the blowback they got. But once they made the decision, even if they thought it was stupid after they made it, it was like, well, we can't undo what we just did. So I'm curious, like, who the executives were, how they found out about this news, how they came up with this vote, and were they aware that we've already been through this with James Gunn and would, knowing that ahead of time, change their mind? Because if I had to guess, most of them didn't know that this already came out and already passed, and they just, like, as soon as they heard it, flipped out the environment that we're in now, and were like, he's got to go. So that was what I got from that interview, and that will be what I would want to know from Bob Iger, that I'll never know until way, way, way down the line when none of these people are in position anymore.
Yes. I did not know until reading that interview that the line of succession at Disney over the last 30 years has been Michael Eisner followed by Bob Iger. Like, it's literally been two guys who have held the power seat of Disney over the last 30 years.
Wasn't Katzenberg somebody in there in between?
Vice president, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was just the idea that the largest company in entertainment has been provided by two guys. Another interesting thing that Mr. Iger said in his interview was that there should not be two Marvels when Disney and Fox join up. And he thinks that they understand that very clearly. Your thoughts on Mr. Iger pretty much telling Mr. Kinberg to go fly a kite?
Oh, I read that and I saw the uproar of it. I'm like, why are y'all surprised? Duh. I mean, they're gonna buy Fox. Fox is Marvel properties. Disney is running a very successful Marvel operation over here. Fox is running a very so-so operation over here. They all came together under one roof in comics. Why wouldn't they go under one roof via movies? My question is, okay, so they're going to be run by the same person. Now, does that mean, like, we can wrap Fantastic Four into the Marvel Universe proper? Okay, bam. Are we doing that with X-Men 2? Or are we leaving X-Men over here by themselves? And if you're doing that, are you going to still let Deadpool be his own little offshoot under the very Rated R banner? Those are my questions.
Well, see, Mr. Feige has ideas.
Oh, I know he has ideas.
Mr. Feige has ideas. And I don't think that the what you do with the X-Men question is going to be a question after February when Mr. Kinberg's Dark Phoenix comes out and just murders any kind of hope that anyone has for future X-Men movies. And then if we ever do get to see New Mutants, I think that might be a possibility going forward. But again, that's a movie that's very much in limbo because, I mean, the whole intent behind it was originally to go with this horror concept, and Fox itself had balked at doing that a couple of times, and they've had to reshoot the movie a couple of times, and they've had issues with that director who's, you know, Boone, who's been bouncing back and forth, you know, like a volleyball in the last year, finishing the movie, then reshooting the movie, then showing the finished version and the finished reshot version, and then being told to go back in and take some stuff out and bring it back to where it was, and having his release date change like three times. You know, Deadpool 2 made as much money as Deadpool, but not more. You know, I think when Dark Phoenix comes out and dies on arrival, provided that he dies on arrival, then the X-Men franchise is in the same place the Fantastic Four franchise is. And you just let it lie dormant for 3 or 4 years, and you can bring it into your own fold. Now, how you weave in the fact that mutants have been around for thousands of years while Iron Man was supposed to be the birth of everything, people can question, but guess what? We're getting a Captain Marvel movie that says, you know, Nick Fury knew about superhumans, you know, 20 years before Iron Man. So...
See, that was more where I was going with it. There's no doubt in my mind that the Fox X-Men universe, like, it's done. I don't care if Dark Phoenix is a success. It's done. After that, gone. So it was always a question of, if you want to bring in mutants to this established world, I think you can... I mean, there are ways to do it. Again, because I'm a comic book guy, you can do that kind of stuff, but when you do that kind of stuff, it gets convoluted. And how much convolution do you want to give to mass audiences? I'm sure they can find a smart way if they wanted to. I just didn't... Personally, I'm fine with X-Men, you know, redoing the whole thing in their own world. Set aside from Marvel proper. Fantastic Four can go to Marvel proper. X-Men can be in their own rebooted universe over here. And that, but I don't know. I don't know what they want to do.
It's not Marvel's game plan, man. Marvel's game plan is everything under one roof, interconnected.
I mean, and yes, and you say that, and then I think back to the interviews where they're like, you know, the thing that they look down on the most is the fact that they had to sell out their properties, and now they get a chance to get them back. So it would be like, okay, we have everything here. It's just the mental gymnastics you're gonna have to do to. Because mutants can't be a phenomenon that just starts.
No, but, you know, there are Celestials, and there are also Eternals, so...
But it's easy.
And they're also Inhumans, so...
It's easier to hide them, because they're, like, they all deal with space. Mutants are very, like, homegrown, and, you know, with the whole... You know, that being the whole analog for civil rights, and then later, like, the LGBTQ plus... community and all that stuff, like it's always been here. All people have always not accepted it, and to have this universe where that's clearly never happened, and then just pop it in there, you can't pop it in right now because, like, I mean, just like two off the top of my head, Apocalypse, he comes from ancient Egypt, and then Magneto is very much
a product of the
Holocaust.
Yeah.
So
I have here's the thing. We gotta bring people back after the snap, right?
Mm-hmm.
About half the universe. Who's to say everybody comes back the same? Who's to say no one comes back with some special abilities that they didn't have before?
If you explained it as in when it came back and affected things through time, and then these people came back like that. That's fine. But I still don't know if they're gonna be in a place. To do
no,
such
you can't.
Things.
You can't answer that question next May. That's
yeah.
Because Cell won't be final till, you know, March. So, I mean, you know, Fox is still in the process of doing the Sky acquisition. The board of directors have all voted on it and approved the sale, but
now it's the government's time. The government
oversight process is 18 months from the time of the board vote, which was in July. So, I mean, that's a long... Every I will not be dotted and every T will not be crossed by the time we get there. So, other Marvel news. We're going to get a female director, Chad. So, how many films have been confirmed or semi-confirmed for Phase 4? You've got Spider-Man Homecoming, Far From Home. You've got the Black Widow standalone movie.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got the Eternals.
Mm-hmm.
Two of those have female directors.
Yeah, we haven't got one for Black Widow, but we got one.
Well, they've got a
did they say who they're doing that?
Yeah, they do have a female director attached to, and a female writer attached to Black Widow. Scarlett Johansson had a huge role in finding and putting those people into place, as she should. I mean, it's her character, her and Joss. You know, and depending on how stuff goes, I would not be surprised if at some point in production of that film, Josh gets asked to do some advising and consulting, considering that the best iteration of the character, arguably, is her two appearances in the two Avengers movies. You can argue that the Russos have written more of that character than anyone, being from Civil War and the two Infinity War movies, but, I mean, she doesn't get a lot of time in Civil War as much as she does...
And I think the best iteration would be, I go Winter Soldier, then Avengers. So yeah, you split the difference between the Russos and Joss.
But two female directors out of three movies isn't bad. Your thoughts on bringing the Eternals in, and would there be a Thanos cameo?
Well, one, I'll say her name is Chloe Zhao. I think I'm saying her name right. I don't know anything about it because she's an indie darling. When I saw that news, I'm like, well, I guess this is really making this movie real. And my forte in comics is not the outer space stuff, because I don't like outer space. It's
one of those things like time travel. It just...
Yeah, if you have to write the things that I don't like in comics or popular culture as a whole, it's time travel, magic, and outer space. I don't mess with any of those. I don't particularly like any of those. So I don't really know much about the Eternals, just because they sound like big, giant, godlike beings out there. I really don't want any part of the Eternals. I don't really think that's something they should do. However, Marvel has done no wrong so far. So
if
they
you would ask somebody after Comic-Con 2012 what the hell Guardians of the Galaxy was and why they would do that.
Yeah, and I had similar feelings to Guardians. I knew who the Guardians were, vaguely, but I didn't like know them. I just knew they were a bunch of people out in space and did some stuff, and I could care less. So with Guardians, I was like, why are you doing this? Considering you should be following up Avengers with another Avengers, but you're doing this, I don't get it. With this, I'm like, I don't want you to do this, because this seems big and massive and gigantic-y space stuff, and I'm just like, I don't know how much people are going to grab onto that. But again, I didn't know Guardians was going to be what Guardians is, and here we are, so whatever with this.
I mean, they've proven now that you can do things off Earth that have nothing, no tangible connection to Earth, and these are people that, you know, we've very well established the Celestials through the Collector and through the monologues about the Infinity Stones. We've known some of the story of other races, other beings through Thanos and his monologue on about Titan and what kind of a place Titan was and how he was rejected by his people, who were Eternals or Celestials or beings like that. So I mean, we've gotten a back door to it, and people haven't had their minds blown. I mean, Perlmutter took the Inhumans from Feige, and we see how great of an idea that was.
Yeah.
But I think Feige would have done it a lot better and a lot differently. In Feige, I trust, and if this is what they want to do, and they want to do it with a director who's going to go from small scale to large scale, it's worked for them a bunch of times in the past, and, you know, it's another frontier, especially considering that right now we're not sure when we're ever going to return to the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Side of the universe. So I'm down for it. I think that they're not gonna say anything officially till Comic-Con next year or D23 next year, because they gotta get Avengers 4 out of the way,
mm-hmm.
to really present to you how they want to move forward. The interesting thing to me is that Far From Home takes place literally moments after the end of Avengers 4, and they're separated by, I think, 8 weeks, 9 weeks, or 12 weeks, something like that. So, you know, first week of May, first week of July, you know. So, it's going to be interesting to me. I really am looking forward to, you know, if you look at the time frame for Infinity War and the time frame for Avengers Age of Ultron, and I think if you look at both of those examples for Avengers films, you get a trailer right around Halloween, Thanksgiving, that corridor. You get another one right around the national championship game for college football, which is around the second week of January. Maybe even if you push it further than that, the Super Bowl, which is the first week of February. And that's it. And the biggest thing that we have questions about is not when are these people coming back, it's how they come back.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of it, too, is what's the name of the damn movie?
Yeah.
If you told us that it's a light spoiler, you've come back and you've kind of said, hey, look, we kind of didn't mean to create this huge cloud of suspicion. we were just trying to be cool and not let you know that everybody died at the end of the part one.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's not play this game of, like, there are seven ladders in this picture that the Russos posted that have, you know, formed seven different A's of different sizes, and that may mean, you know, something different. It just... The biggest thing that's going to be revealed in that first trailer will be the credits. Will be the name of the film.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. And they're finishing up reshoots now. The Russos are going to be hard at work on this film, you know, till it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting to see. So Chad, a movie that everybody's dying to see, Venom. First week of October. We found out about press screenings. What did we find out about press screenings this week, Chad?
Press screenings are happening roughly a little over 24 hours before theatrical release for the movie.
And tell the good people, Chad, what that typically means.
So, if you watch a studio like Marvel, like with Black Panther, the press screenings for Black Panther were...
1 month.
It was a month?
Okay. It was a month.
It was a whole month before the movie came out. And at that moment, I think pretty much right, like after they saw it.
Social media reaction.
So they had a whole month of people telling them, this movie is good. The fact that they let them see it a month early and do that tells you the studio had faith in it and they knew the movie was good. Now, there are other movies I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Star Wars will only screen like the week of. But
Star Wars is the exception. But anybody else, if they're screening, the normal screening period is like...
2 weeks.
2 weeks, and reviews will happen like the week before.
2 weeks, social media, and then an embargo on full reviews until about a week after.
Yeah. Now, if you're... The closer to the date a movie is, says more about how the studio really feels about it. So if you're dropping a movie to the critics a day before, it tells you that you aren't... You think the critics are going to hate this movie and you're trying to mitigate the damage their reviews are going to do. Which tells me that you think your movie's garbage. So, Sony thinks Venom is garbage.
What is that conversation going to be like following Monday morning when Amy Pascal has to go into Tom Rothman's office and talk to him about the box office receipts?
Well, see, I think they're going to get bailed out on the receipts because Venom... has shown that it has enough of a name and cachet that it's going to win the weekend. So
will it though? I mean, A Star Is Born has got like across the board praise. People are already saying this is going to be like La La Land Part 2. Like this is a serious contender for the Academy Award. It's gotten a nationwide release on the 5th. They've been running advertising for it. I mean,
and with all of that, Venom should still be number one.
And if they aren't?
If it is not, it is done. And this is what I'm hoping for. I want Star Wars to come out and crush it. Just grind it into the ground. And just, we can be done with this nightmare the first weekend. Because if it's number one, that means we drag this out and see how the box office receipts do. And if it has legs and all that stuff. But if it loses the first week, it's gravestone. Just put it right there. It's done. And then that conversation is, well, we really shouldn't have said we're doing all these other movies now, should we? We should have just let Marvel keep writing this check, shouldn't we? Now we got to go tuck our tails between our legs. Part of that means that heads got to roll, Amy. I know we fired you once. We're not technically firing you this time. We're just not going to work with you as a studio anymore. You can still do other stuff with everybody else. Just not us. So, yeah, sorry. That's the only thing it can be. Sony needs hits. Sony needs franchises. Right now, their only franchise, viable one, is Jumanji. They're hoping to get Men in Black started again. That's why they're so desperately trying to get this Spider-Man offshoot universe going. But if it dies on the first weekend, that's a wrap. All the other stuff we heard, Morbius, Black Cat, Silver Sable, wrap them all up. Ship them off. It's over. It's done.
So, I saw The Predator like 3 times. Messy film. I love Shane Black. It's a very muddled film. It made $28 million opening weekend. which is a disappointment on a budget of like 180. If they end up doing that kind, because if you look at the numbers for the last 3 weeks, I mean, the box office has topped all out at somewhere between $20 to $28 million. I mean, it's not like you've been having these huge opening weekends. Mm. Now, there are tracking numbers out there for Venom, but even those aren't, you know, astounding. You're not heading toward an $80 million opening weekend. No. It might be tight, depending on what happens. I agree, you're trying to limit the damage that the reviews are going to do, but, I mean, you pretty much already assumed that this was, you weren't going to get great reviews out of this movie anyway. As long as you don't end up going the Defiant route, or, you know, having Rupert Wyatt come out and, you know, say on Twitter that, you know, he had a great version of this movie that you're never going to see. Yeah. You know, I don't, like, it's going to be really hard for me to see this thing going for a month and making Sony all the money. I mean, at most it might run 2 weeks and then Halloween's just going to kill it. So,
I think there were, you know, every time this we brought up this movie, you said all the pieces involved with this movie look really good. Mm-hmm. And I think they have their face.
Michelle Williams, Rosamund,
and of course Tom Hardy, everybody loves him. So they have their faith in all that, but it's just, you can't take this property and then do something that this property is not, which is divorce it from the main reason the character exists. And I think that's what they're going to find out, and they're going to have to be like, hey, Disney, we want to re-up. And then Disney's just going to lean back and light a cigar and be like, I'm about to bleed you dry.
My thing here is, like, it's not even the fact that they divorced the character. To me, it's the fact that they've done a bad marketing job on it. They haven't cut a trailer that looks really awesome or gets people on board. The good news is they haven't gone the Defiant route and just flown the finger at people and just been like, our movie's great anyway. I mean, you took Marvel's, something out of Marvel's toolbox that was very important to them to try and do this, and you're going to get burned on it. And, you know, we could all be wrong. The movie could turn out absolutely amazing and run on for a month and make $200, $300 million. I just don't get that vibe from the tracking numbers I'm seeing, and I don't get that vibe from the trailer reactions or the nerd community as a whole, and I don't sense a whole great sense of knowledge in the general populace about Venom or what Venom is. So, you know, it's interesting to see them trying so desperately to make a PG-13 Venom movie, because I half joked about, you know, the director going off and pulling a Josh Trank, but the guy was quoted at Comic-Con as saying, oh yeah, it's gonna be R. You can't, this is a character that eats pancreases and bites people's heads off and eats brains. You can't, it would be a disservice to the character to do it as a PG-13. 2 weeks later, you get the studio planning the trades that it's gonna be a PG-13 because we need to tone it down so that Mr. Holland's Spider-Man can interact with it. And I'm just like, and then that same article talks about how they're bleepfully hoping to show Marvel that they can do really good and ask Marvel to buy their characters from them or buy in and bring them into the MCU. I'm like, no, that's not how that works.
No.
You don't spend money making a movie hoping that another studio will buy your character from you or include him or her in the MCU and then get a deal done. Like, you know, you can't make a deal for Venom. Not this Tom Hardy Venom. Because you've got a Spider-Man who's 16 years old. Like, even if you want to do the schism thing where, like, oh, this takes place, you know, 10 years after Homecoming when, you know, Peter Parker's an actual entity, you know, grown up and he's working for the Daily Bugle and he's married to Mary Jane and all this. Doesn't work because, you know, again, that Peter Parker would have to be around. It would have to be hinted at in the film, and there's been no...
Nothing.
Nothing. So, I mean, why would you position yourself in a situation where, hey, we're going to make this Black Cat movie, and hey, Marvel, if you like it, you make a deal with us, and you can have put her in the MCU, and we can, you know, we can take make solo movies and keep the money, but you can have her too. You can make money off of her too. I mean, it's like, I don't understand that thought process as a studio.
Nobody does, because it's not a smart one.
Okay, so Chad, the last thing Mr. Iger talked about on his in his article or in his interview was, my bad. I fast-tracked a whole bunch of Star Wars. It was too much too soon, man. I screwed the pooch. I messed up. You know, we're going to slow things down. But, like, we're not going to stop making movies. We've got the Game of Thrones, people who have their own troubled sexual harassment history, you know, to come in and do a trilogy. We got Ryan working on this, and we've got JJ, you know, right now shooting 9. But, like, my bad. I'm the one who forced him to rush a movie out for December 2015. I'm the one who told him that we needed a new Star Wars movie 6 months after Return of Last Jedi. Like, that was all me. I was trying to flood the marketplace, have to make my shareholders happy. My bad. We've learned our lesson. We're going to fix that now. Your thoughts on those comments and the internet's reaction to, oh my god, a Star Wars slowdown!
I can't help but agree somewhat. I mean, Disney was, like, they were over, I guess now we can say they were overzealous. They shot for the moon, and maybe they shouldn't have shot quite so far, so fast. So when I hear them say slow down, it just means, like, they're taking their time, they're pulling back, they're taking their time. The property is too important to, like stop completely, but they have to reevaluate how they did stuff. Which is fine. That's completely fine. So when I heard it, I was like, okay, sounds good. Get your stuff in order. Because my biggest issue with Star Wars since it's come back is similar to my issue with the other people we'll talk about in a minute, is that they didn't have a overarching plan. And they just kind of went with things. Like,
they were just trying to get a damn movie out for December 2015. They weren't thinking about anything else.
They said they were going to do this trilogy, but they had no overarching story for this trilogy. And it's fine if you don't have an overarching story for a movie when you just make one and, like, okay, we'll make some more. It's like, no, we know we're making 3. You think they would make an overarching story, but it's been like, nope, we're going to do this, we're going to let him do this, and then we're just trying to make all this work together. So now it seems like they're going to slow down. They're going to, I would bet, they have more independent movies and space them out more. But when they do another trilogy, because they're going to, it'll be well thought out, planned in advance, and they'll know exactly what they want to do.
I don't think there's a 10, 11, and 12.
I don't think
there's a 10, 11, and 12 with them officially saying this is the end of the Skywalker saga. Look, Disney put out a press release in October of 2012 and said, we bought Lucasfilm, new movies, the originals are coming back in theaters May 2015. That was their biggest problem. They had set a date in October of 2012, gave themselves 3 years, and were hard and fast on that date, and that screwed everything up. Mm-hmm. Because just on the periphery of information that we know in the public sphere, Michael Arndt was given that George Lucas treatment, and he was told to make something out of it. He couldn't crack it. Once JJ came on board in January of 13, they all sat around with Kathleen Kennedy and Kasdan in the story group, and they tried to crack it. And the way the story goes is, we couldn't even come to a draft. We could never get to a place where we were comfortable enough with all of our ideas, but we knew that this May 2015 date was coming, so we were all, while we're sitting here still trying to crack a story, sets are being built over at Pinewood, people are being cast. Meanwhile, we have no script, and we have no story, and no idea what we're supposed to do. And all we know is that we have this character named Kara, and we know that we have this son of Luke and the son of Leia and Han, but we don't know all of this periphery. And oh my goodness, now we're, you know, it's October of 2014, October of 2013, and we've got to start shooting in February or March of 2014 for this 2015 date, and we're starting to cast people. Hey, Bob, can you give us another full year? Can you move us to May of 2016 and give us a lot more time to work on this story and flesh this out? What's she talking about, Kathleen? No, I can't do that. I got shareholders. I promised them toy money. You understand me? Toy money. You have till December. Take what you can get. Make it happen. And so Kathleen goes back to JJ and was like, well, JJ, I tried. I pleaded with the master, and the master just gave us this. Well, crap. We can do that, but you know what? I think we need to get rid of this Ardnick guy, and me and Lawrence will sit down, and we'll walk around Europe, and we'll record our conversations, and we'll figure out a story, and we'll get the cast together for a set photo, and a cast read photo, and then we'll go shoot. Okay. And that's the story of how all of this happened. That's to make The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
And you know, the only communication Rian Johnston and J.J. Abrams substantially had about Force Awakens and how it related to The Last Jedi was, hey, can you please make sure R2 is with Rey at the end? That's it! That's it! And we know that while Rian was doing The Last Jedi, Mr. Trevorrow was over here trying to take a leak on the history of Star Wars and do his crazy whatever he was going to do, and Star Wars and Jurassic World mix up or whatever. You know, Luke's going to ride a dinosaur with a lightsaber, whatever he was going to do. And then he gets fired because he can't come up with a story that passes muster with Lucasfilm for what Rian was going to leave. Which, again, boggles my mind because Rian literally leaves it so open-ended that you can literally do anything, most importantly, a ginormous time jump. So, you fire Colin, you don't really have anybody else in the city who wants to take the damn job because no one wants to deal with the toxic fan base and the reaction. And Ryan's too burned out from just literally having shot, edited, and done press for a film. So you go back to JJ and ask JJ to come back and do it, and JJ says yes, and he's going to make whatever he can make out of whatever he wants to do. But you also made the mistake of, you know, putting a Han Solo movie in May. And if you looked at the release schedule, the way it had gone, you had Force Awakens in December of 15, you had Rogue One in December of 17. Of 16, and then you had Last Jedi in December of 17. Then you had Han Solo. Now, we've all talked about the reasons, the calendar reasons why Disney left it, because you had Wreck-It Ralph, you had Mary Poppins Returns, you really couldn't move it to December. Could you have delayed it till the following May and pushed it back an entire year from May of 18 to May of 19, possibly, but then again, you're running up into the same problem of episode 9 coming in December of 19, which, if you look at the calendar for 19, December of 19, nothing's moved. So, I mean, it's going to be a crowded season. Star Wars isn't chasing things away the way it normally would. But I think they figured out that that traditional May spot is more competitive than what it was when the prequels were out there. You can't dominate it the same way you can dominate the holiday corridor. Two, I think they found out that you can't put two movies within 6 months of each other.
Yeah.
It didn't matter the content. It didn't matter the content. It didn't matter the quality of the film. It didn't matter what character you were using. You could have done the Obi-Wan Kenobi movie with Ewan McGregor, and if you stuck it 6 months after Last Jedi, with everything that comes with The Last Jedi, it was going to have issues. And with everything surrounding it, it was going to have issues. That's it. And so now Iger's saying, look, I screwed up. I rushed this. We're going to take our time. We're going to slow down. Right now, we're only focused on shooting 9 and letting JJ do what he wants to do. You know, we've contracted out with Rian to do a trilogy. We contracted out with these Game of Thrones people to do theirs. their trilogies. They're going to go do their thing, you know. But right now, we're just focused on making the best nine that we can, and we're not announcing anything going forward, so.
Yeah, that, I mean, I'm...
You do all of that just to make one movie. There's no there's no wonder why you don't have a MCU-like overarching plan. Or the reason you don't have the George Lucas-style overarching plan. Because Lucas had all three films written in his head before he ever set pen to paper. You know, that was the problem. JJ set things up. Ryan chose not to deal with a lot of that stuff. Ryan dealt with his own stuff, and now JJ has to come in.
Deal with that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I'm not as in an uproar as everybody else. This just makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Slow down to 1 year.
Yeah.
Maybe take a couple of years off.
I think
You are not going to move less merch at Star Wars Land because there's not a Star Wars movie yet.
Yeah.
Sorry. So, Chad, the good people at Warner Brothers, busy promoting and working on It Chapter 2, but they're also working on a few other things. They've got Aquaman coming out in December. They've got Wonder Woman 1984 coming out. They made some news this week. They are publicly negotiating with Henry Cavill. Your thoughts on the Henry Cavill Warner Brothers dispute in the public domain?
Okay, so I can't go into the Henry Cavill stuff without going in. It's just going to go into everything with DC. So let's see how fast I can get through this and not get my blood pressure up. Because again, I've got to go to the doctor tomorrow, and I don't need him saying, "Oh, your blood pressure's up." Yeah, because I was arguing about stupid people in capes. Okay, so Warner Brothers starts this last 2 weeks off with was it the Hollywood Reporter that dropped the news that Henry Cavill was out of Superman. From there that day, we get a tweet from his manager, Danny Garcia, The Rock's ex-wife, saying that, chill out, he still got the cape.
Cape's in the closet.
We're still good. And then Henry tweets out this, Warner Brothers releases a statement that's very
vague,
non-committal, saying, we have a great relationship with him, nothing going on, the end. Henry tweets out, sends an Instagram with this video of him to the Blue Danube, and it's just him in the mirror. He raises up Superman X figure, he raises it down. That's it. And that's all we've gotten on the Superman front. Okay. So you fast forward. Honestly, there's not a lot that happens between then and this week that just passed. So this week, like just a few days ago, we got a video from Todd Phillips, who is directing the movie that I never thought should see the light of day, the Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix. And it looks like a screen test that has him as his regular human person, author, and then it changes to him in his Joker makeup. And it's really quick, and the Joker makeup is a departure from what we know the Joker as. It's more akin to the Heath Ledger just clown makeup stuff, but it's got a different dynamic. I'm sure you've seen the picture by now. So he puts that out and he sets the internet ablaze. Lots of takes on that.
Does more today.
Well, that's not him. And this was, out of all of the Warner Brothers stuff, I'm going to say this is actually smart. He knew the stuff they were shooting, they have people out taking pictures, and he didn't want the first image of his Joker to be those pictures, so he put this out, which is the smartest thing I'm going to say Warner Brothers did this whole freaking time. So then, what the one thing I'm going to focus on from that was Diane Nelson, who was the head of DC Entertainment. She recently stepped down earlier this year. She sent out a tweet after she saw that. It was like, yes, this is what we should have been doing since the Nolan films. And my reaction to that, what I sent out was, this tweet encapsulates what's going on with Warner Brothers all the way through. Because in that tweet, this is a higher up in DC that's saying, we should have let the directors do what they want to do, and that's what we should have been doing since The Dark Knight ended. We know that's not what they were trying to do. They were trying to make a cinematic universe that has not worked out well. So, putting all this together, it just shows, it paints a picture that Warner Brothers, as we know it, is a dysfunctional mess when it comes to DC. And I think what her tweet really illustrates is what, now I would say it from time to time, is like, there are people in DC that don't believe in the direction things are going. And some of those people are leaking, are causing all these leaks that we always used to get. I'm not saying Diane Nelson did it. I'm pretty sure she wouldn't do it because she was so high up. But if she feels that way, there's got to be other people in that camp. And so they're leaking this stuff out, not only to say that they don't like the direction it's going, it's also to make the people that are going that direction look bad so eventually they can try to take over the power. So that means, so we've got these two ideologies that don't get along and they're constantly sabotaging each other. And that is what is reflected in these movies, most notably Justice League, which is called, we would always say, we just got to get through this movie. We knew it was going to be a colossal mess. That's what it was. It felt like a whole bunch of people.
The very interesting product of two directors.
Yeah, there's two directors, and the whole thing felt like bickering between a whole bunch of people. Justice League is a manifestation of what the Warner, behind the scenes of Warner Brothers was for DC. So I'm saying all that to say, because of that, they have, like, I've been sitting here for years, like, trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. They're going to change this. They keep saying they're going to change this. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. They're going to keep getting better. But in actuality, they're not. And it's to the point where me, I just want these movies to be good, to be like, I'm done. I can't believe anything you're saying. Yeah, I'm still in, you still got me in the pocket. I'm still going to go see these movies. But whenever you put something out, I can't believe you. I can't be one of the people that's going to say, give them the benefit of doubt, because they have proven they don't know what to do. And in this, like, the where the blame is going to fall, like, is, like in the situation with Henry Cavill, I truly believe part of the thing with Henry is that Henry wants more money and some more control over the movies. And Warner Brothers is saying no, because the movies you've done for us have not worked. And yes, you can paint that on the actor, but as we've seen, I think this goes back to the failure of these films is from top down, like executives on down. So you had, like, they put together good pieces, but because of the stuff going on behind the scenes, the movies haven't worked out. And I know the quick answer is to be like, well, you can just flush all actors and start anew, but if the structure's still there, it's still going to be the same thing. And I think fans in general are going to be more, they're more forgiving of actors in roles, like if they're in a bad role, but they come back to that same role and it's better, they're fine. You don't have to recast them. They're good with that stuff. To just jettison all of that is a failure on the studio's part, but they are a studio of failures when it comes to DC. So when we come into like the Joker movie is this thing, because all of like the real film people that I see on Twitter, they're all on board for this movie.
The
higher people, they're all on board because it's like, this director has this vision and he's doing all this, and I can see all that. Like, I look at the picture of Joaquin Phoenix as a Joker. Visually, I don't like it, but I know they're going for something new. I can deal with that. My whole thing is, this, you can do the high art version of the Joker, but it should be an alternative to the more mainstream fan ready version of the Joker. And I think if you already had that and then you go this way, fans would be more on board when you give them an alternative version. It's like, oh, they're doing something different, but I still got my guy over here.
Your guy in this case is Jared Leto, who no one likes because he has damage tattooed on his forehead.
Yeah, well, but that, again, I think, I mean, Jared has a lot of choices in that because he had a lot of control over that character. But just in general, it's like this, all of that is from your failed stuff. And the whole crux of Warner Brothers thing is that they want to be so highbrow, so high art, that they were so resistant to making a cinematic universe or trying to figure out a way to make a universe that fits into what they do, that they've destroyed all that, and now they're going to champion this, which is fine, but I think they're going to learn the wrong lessons from that. And like, you can do the high art, whatever director vision of all these characters, but don't do just that. And I think outside of Wonder Woman, I think that's, if Joker hits, that's what they're going to do. And it's just going to piss off all the fans. Yeah, the high art people might like it, but the people that have been here for years, like, all I want is a good Superman movie, like with a Superman that I know, and y'all refuse to give it to me, yet you're going to keep doing that, and you're going to keep getting this whole divide of the jaded comic fans looking at the higher up people like, we don't want that. We want something else. So, yeah. There's probably some other points I can make, but that's the crux of it. DC has lost all faith with anybody. If I'm letting it go, it's done. And I think the Joker movie is going to come out. I think the higher people are going to really like it. I think it's going to be a critical hit. And Warner Brothers is going to be like, let's do all these movies this way and forget this. And it's just going to piss a whole bunch of people off. Me being one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Todd Phillips' Joker movie looks cool. And I guess what that tweet would encapsulate is, hey, we should continue to go do the dark and gritty thing. See, but
I don't even think it's that.
I mean, they let Zack do his thing. That's the whole problem. Like, they gave Zack some guidance on, hey, we'd like a Wayne Enterprises satellite in Man of Steel so you could possibly tease Batman. But the aesthetic, the look, the feel, the length, the storyline, the structure, everything about Dawn of Justice, Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, is Zack Snyder. That is a Zack Snyder Superman movie, a Zack Snyder Batman movie. That is who he is. That is the guy that you hired. Okay? The problem that you had is that his Superman movie was mixed reviewed, and nobody liked Dawn of Justice, and you'd already pot committed to filming Justice League 3 weeks later, and you couldn't course correct, and then you got into this tug of war for power. Like, it's not that you didn't let your directors do what you... This is not a Edgar Wright Marvel situation. The problem is, no one told Zack no. No one told Zack no. No one set him down and said, this is deconstructionism, and that's cool, but this is not the traditional interpretation of these characters, and we need a traditional interpretation of these characters. In a way that isn't, you know, darkness, no parents.
I think Zack was reined in the most on Man of Steel. And I think that really was Chris Nolan. Because I don't even know Chris Nolan's on No, but he had to walk through everything with Nolan. And that might have evolved some of the things he thought.
And Goyer and Nolan cracked that idea on the set of The Dark Knight. Yeah. So, I mean, that was their baby. That wasn't Zack's idea.
Yeah. But Dawn of Justice is all Zack, and they let him run with it. And that, the thing is, they want to let their, Warner Brothers wants to let the directors do what they want, but they wanted that cinematic universe. So they had this guy that they thought had this passion, and he could bring these ideas, and he can build this universe without thinking that maybe the people don't like what his universe is. And a part of that is, I truly think execs in Warner, because they're so highbrow, they look at DC and they're like, we need it for franchise potential, but I really don't want anything to do with this stuff. I want to do the other stuff. So they're like, we got this guy, he wants to do it. He's the director of this one movie. It made us some money, and he wants to put Batman in it. That's going to automatically bump it up. Let him run with it. That is the like critical mistake of all of this. But it would be solved if you had somebody in that room that isn't exact. It's like, I love these characters. maybe we shouldn't do this.
Or maybe we should put a check. Like someone to work with him.
Yeah.
Because Johns wasn't brought in until way late in the process and by his own account, didn't have a lot of influence. Like, if you'd have had somebody to consult with Zach and to oversee Zach, not in a Edgar Wright Marvel way, where, like, the creative committee gives you 500 notes and you have to go back and forth and all this, but, like, a Chris Nolan-Zach relationship, where it's like, here's the story, here's the vision, let's work on this together to produce the best possible product. And if that would have been the case, I think you could have gotten a better thing. The Batman idea was all Zach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's from Zach's time where, you know, Man of Steel got delayed, and because of the I don't think it was the writer's strike, but there was some reason why it got delayed. And in that delay, he brings Ben in and pitches Ben on Batman. And, you know, a month after Man of Steel comes out, you get Comic-Con and the reading of the cartoon of the comic book and the announcement that we're doing Batman v Superman on film, something no one thought that they would ever live to see, and everybody's on the hype train, and then you know, the internet gets ablaze because Ben Affleck gets cast as Batman, and it's pretty much all downhill from there.
Well, I think you have peaks and valleys. Like, people freaked out when Ben got cast, then when they saw him in the suit, they were like, okay.
Frank Miller's Batman.
Yeah,
okay.
And I think they stayed on that uptick until the movie came out. Then it was like a straight up crash.
But I don't think that this is a failure in the sense that the studio overlorded and forced the director.
No.
I think this is purely the director had so much freedom and so much unabashed control that he made a movie that no one really liked. Fans couldn't get on board with it, and certainly the general public didn't get on board with it. And then you gave that guy the keys to your team-up movie that you rushed into production, and it was too late.
Yeah, when they announced their schedule and they said that Zack Snyder was directing Justice League 1 and 2, I'm like, and this is before Batman vs. Superman ever came out, I'm like, that's a whole lot of trust in Zack Snyder. At that point, I was still hopeful. I'm like, I think Zack can correct the problem with Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman, and Justice League will be fine. But again, if you missed out on Batman vs. Superman, the rest of it just goes all down the toilet, and that's where we're at.
Mm-hmm. And I don't, like, to make the comment that this is the direction we should have been going the entire time, it's like, so standalone one-off movies with individual characters, like, you can make the actual argument that there should have been a Man of Steel 2, and then a Batman movie, and then a Dawn of Justice, and then a Justice League movie. The problem is, you're operating in a climate where the Avengers movie, the first Avengers movie, comes out in 2012 and breaks all kinds of box office records, and everybody's in love, and Marvel's bet pays off, and now you look like you're crapping the bed because you can't get your movie out there fast enough.
Yeah. If they want... This is what killed me about that. We should have been doing this whole thing, this, you know, creative-driven separate things all on their own. You can do that and still have the shared universe. There's no reason, like Wonder Woman. Yeah, Wonder Woman is the Batman, the Bruce Wayne thing in the beginning, Bruce Wayne thing in the end. That movie's very standalone. There's no reason you can't have like a Wonder Woman movie and have James Wan do the Aquaman movie, and they don't have to touch. They don't have, like, yes, Marvel has through lines through all of their movies. You don't have to do that. You can have these separate characters in these movies. You don't even have to do the references. And you could just do a goddamn Justice League movie. Just put all the same people in it. All you have to know, like, every movie, every franchise has parameters that the studio sets. There's nothing different about this. It's just like, okay, Wonder Woman director wants to use Lex Luthor. WB says, no, you can't. He's with Superman. Do something else. Okay. That's all it has to be. You don't have to make the references, nothing. If a director wants to make the references, fine. Just put them all out there.
That's what happened with Patty.
Yeah, that's all you have to do. You know that Wonder Woman's here, and in her world, there is a Gotham City. That's all you need to know. You don't need to know anything else. And then you just bring them together for a Justice League movie, and then break their asses off into their own little separate things again. You don't have to be Marvel and have a constant drew line driving through the whole thing.
You know, Marvel itself didn't have that in Phase 1.
No.
phase one is, like, Nick Fury is literally the glue that brings everything together.
Yeah, and he's only in bits and pieces, and you don't have to, like, look at the damn comics. Just right now, like, right now in the comics, in the Superman comic, Earth is in the Phantom Zone, where General Zod is locked up. The whole planet is in there. I can guarantee you, none of the other, like, the Flash book, the Batman book, none of them are going to say anything about that in any of their books around this right now. But when they get together in the Justice League book, they'll talk about it. That's it. That is literally what these movies had to be.
Indeed. So, Chad, we are in the middle of a kind of a dry period. As I said, Predator didn't make a whole lot of money. The House with the Clock in the Walls made okay money this weekend. But we're driving toward Venom, and then after that, we're going to drive toward the Halloween remake, which is getting tremendous, tremendous buzz. And then we're going to, you know, kind of be on our way to the holiday season, and it'll be interesting as we'll actually have some movies to talk about.
Yes.
I feel like we haven't had solid movies to talk about.
It's been ages, man.
Hell, it hasn't for me. I mean, I saw.
Yeah, I mean, you saw a whole bunch of.
I saw The Meg 3 times. I saw Predator 3 times, and you know, I seen The House, The Clock in the Walls once. Yeah, I mean, that new AMC pass really works for me.
Yeah.
So.
I think the last one I saw was Ant-Man. So yeah, that's what life with a kid happens.
It happens. All right, so that'll about do it for this week's episode. If you want to keep up with our podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm @BCWTigerFan.
@TheMetsTheory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.